Radha Krishna Gopina Shaiva Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanand. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale. Srimati Bhakti Vinata Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve. Gauravani Kacharani. Nivasesa Sanyavadi Paskatyade Sacharani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavamscha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Scha Vanchakalpa Tripascha Kripasandhya Vachapatitanam Pavanevya Vaishnavi Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it's the 28th of September 2020 in Hillsborough, North Carolina. A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 20, Text 29. This is the description of the rainy season and autumn. Tadyodhanam samanitam Shilayam salilantike Sambojani arbubuje Gopai sankarshananvita. Tadyodhanam, boiled rice mixed with yogurt. Samanhitam, sent. Shilayam, on a stone. Salila antike, near the water. Sambho janiyai, who would take meals with him. Bubuje, he ate. Gopai, together with the cowherd boys. Sankarshana Anvitaha, in the company of Lord Balaram. BBT translation, Lord Krishna would take his meal of boiled rice and yogurt, sent from home, in the company of Lord Sankarshana and the cowherd boys who regularly ate with him. They would all sit down to eat on a large stone near the water. There's no BBT purport. We're going to look at Light of the Bhagavata, text 26. Srila Prabhupada's translation of this verse, the Lord enjoyed in the company of Lord Baladev and the other cowherd boys, and sometimes sat with them on the same stone slab. While sitting, they ate simple food like rice, dal, vegetables, bread, and curd. By curd, Prabhupada means yogurt, which they had brought from their homes and which they shared in friendly exchanges. So as we often see in Srila Prabhupada's translation, he puts part of the purport into the translation. You know, he's adding dal, vegetables, and bread. Right, whereas the Sanskrit just talked about rice and yogurt. And shared in friendly exchanges. So he's Prabhupada's commentary in Light of the Bhagavata. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord has expressed his willingness to accept fruit, flowers, leaves, and water from his devotee when they have been offered to him in devotional affection. So who knows that verse? Maybe we can all say it together. Patram pushpam palavatvayam yome bhakta prayachati taraham bhakti paritam ashnami prayatatmaha. Do we know the English? If one offers me, yes?
If one offers me a fruit, a flower, or water, I will accept it.
And a leaf.
And a leaf.
Don't forget the leaves. Okay. The Lord can eat anything and everything. Because everything is a transformation of his own energy. When does the Lord eat? Lots of other things besides leaves, flowers, fruit, and water.
Universal form.
In the universal form. What's he eating in the universal form?
Human beings.
Human beings. He's eating the soldiers. They're getting crushed between his teeth. Right? And at the end of the whole manifestation, everything gets sucked into the body of Mahavishnu. Yes? Yeah? Everything. So the Lord can eat anything and everything, because everything is but a transformation of his own energy. But when there is a question of offering him something, the offerings must be within the range of the eatables the Lord has ordered. We cannot offer the Lord that which he has not ordered. The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna cannot be offered anything beyond the range of good foodstuffs, like rice, dal, wheat, vegetables, milk, and milk preparations and sugar. At Jagannath Puri, the Lord is offered such foodstuffs, and in all scriptures, the very same foodstuffs are mentioned everywhere. The Lord is never hungry, nor does he require any food to fill his empty stomach. So we have a machine, right? Yantra Runani Maya, we have a machine, and our machine needs fuel to run. If the machine doesn't get fuel, it can't function. So therefore we feel hunger. But the Lord doesn't have a material body like a machine that needs fuel. He doesn't have this sense of hunger for food that we have from this machine. He is complete in himself. So he already has everything. All the possible food he could eat is already there. He could say he already is the food. Yet he always mercifully eats the foods offered by his devotees in sincere affection. The cowherd boys brought simple foodstuffs from home, and the Lord, who is constantly served by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune, is always glad to accept such simple foodstuffs from his devotee friends. Isn't that a sweet scene? Huh? Who has this idea of God? All the relatives of the Lord are his devotees only, and they are situated in different transcendental mellows as friends, parents, and lovers. The Lord derives transcendental pleasure by accepting services from his various grades of devotees who are situated in various grades of rasas. These transcendental rasas are pervertedly reflected in the material atmosphere, and thus the spiritual living being, out of ignorance only, vainly seeks the same bliss in matter. Alright, we're going to look at commentaries of the Acharyas. We're going to look at Jiva Goswami's commentary. He took food brought by his relatives or brought by friends who were nearby. He ate with cowherds who were qualified to eat with him, being similar in caste, sambhojayaniyai. Some means together. Or, I really like this. Sambhojan iyai can mean together with condiments. Do you know what condiments are?
Pickles.
Like pickles. Yeah. So a few years ago, I was in a grocery store in America, and I asked one of the workers there, where are the spices? And she gives me this look. The what? I said, where are the spices? She looks really confused. And then she says, oh, I know. And she takes me to where the ketchup and the mustard are. I said, do you cook? She says, no, I've never cooked. This is our modern society. So maybe they had some condiments. Like, you remember the story of Brahma stealing the boys and cows? So the Acharyas, it says that Krishna had yogurt and rice and fruit. Like today we're reading about yogurt and rice. So then he had yogurt, rice, and fruit in his left hand, and he had pickles in his right hand. And Jiva Goswami also says, Balaram was in their midst. And so we're going to look now at Sanatana Goswami's commentary. The food brought with them, packed by Yasoda, was brought closer by the boys at the appropriate time, or was offered by each of them as a gift to Krishna, samanitam, because it was plentiful and sweet. He ate on a stone plate, since the food was liquid with plentiful yogurt, and because the stone became beautiful after being cleansed by the showers. So this is after the rainy season. So, you know, when you find stones and then you wash them, they often become more beautiful, like, right? I used to do that as a kid all the time. Collect rocks and then wash them and see what different colors manifested. He ate near the water. In that season, there was water everywhere. Or he chose a spot near the water in order to drink water. So nowadays, right, we're all carrying bottles of water everywhere, right? People drinking bottled water, filtered water. I remember Bhakti Chiu Swami saying, pretty soon people are going to have to start carrying oxygen canisters around them. You know, when I was growing up, right, when we were kids, we didn't buy water. We just drink the water. And when I was 16, I went on a bicycle tour, a youth group through the Rocky Mountains in Canada, through Jasper Banff National Park. And one of the things that struck me then was you could drink any of the river water. You know, we find the rivers and the streams, and don't worry, you can drink it. Right? So imagine that, an earth where you could actually drink the river water and the stream water. So they wanted to have their picnic near water, so if they wanted something to drink, they didn't have to bring water with them. You know, Maharaj talked the other day about how he photoshopped a picture of a waterfall in Govardhan. But there were actually, you know, waterfalls in it, of course, the Yamuna. He had all the boys eat, since they ate together on one stone plate. He made them sit down in one place. Balaram made them come together as one, Sankarsana, since the two boys were not separate from the other cowherd. Sankarsana also means to attract. Or Shilanam in the singular can mean many stone plates, since there was not enough room on one plate. Krishna made the boys sit in rows, putting Balaram in the center, and personally served the food and made them eat. Then he ate. I thought these were particularly wonderful commentaries. So we were just studying yesterday in our Bhakti Shastri course about the six loving exchanges between the devotees. Right? And they involve what? Three things. What are the three things involved in the loving exchanges? Prasadam. Gifts. And?
Confidences.
Exchanging confidences. So one of them is exchanging food. You give food and you get food. Yes? So these loving exchanges go on between the Lord and his devotees, and between the devotees and one another. And Prabhupada makes this astonishing statement in the purport that the purpose of our Krishna conscious society is to facilitate these loving exchanges. I find that a very astonishing statement. It's one of the reasons why Srila Prabhupada established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, so we can have loving exchanges with each other. And then he says the life of the Krishna Conscious Society is nourished by these loving exchanges. And just like Srila Prabhupada mentions in the end of his commentary in light of the Bhagavata, people are engaging in these exchanges in a perverted way with matter. So everyone's trying for these loving exchanges, and Prabhupada talks about in his purport to Nectar of Instruction, Text 4, that these loving exchanges are prevalent everywhere. He says even when business people want to make a deal, right, they meet in some restaurant, or maybe get invited for dinner over to the home of one of them, and somebody cooks and somebody eats, and there's often an exchange of gifts. So this goes on everywhere, right, in families all over the world. People show their love for each other by eating with each other, isn't it? Right? You go to your grandma's house and she cooks for you, or you know, you come home for Thanksgiving and your mother is cooking, or right? You visit with friends and people are cooking and sharing food, sending gifts of food to one another, and so forth. The problem is that if it's on the material platform, as Prabhupada says, it's not satisfying. Yes, we have this experience. Do we all have this experience? That often our very attempts to have a loving exchange materially, all they bring us is angst. Like, oh my God, I got to go visit the relatives for Christmas. Do I have to see Uncle Joe again? I hate Uncle Joe. You know, and Aunt Sally's always talking about her rheumatism. And then my cousin's going to bring the cake and she's a terrible baker and we got to pretend we like her cake, you know. And it's not actually a pleasant experience. Isn't it a fact? Right? And you go to some restaurant with somebody and you don't like the food and you have to pretend you like the food and then you get the bill and it's $200. And I remember my father telling me how he took my older sister and her husband out to dinner and theater in New York and the whole evening cost $1,000. You know, so just one meal in entertainment. It costs so much money, and you're like, why did I spend so much money? Unfortunately, our material relationships are like that, that we're thinking, I'm going to have a loving exchange. Right? One devotee recently asked about Prabhupada's assertion that real rasa is not generally possible between different species, and Maharaj gave such a nice answer to that a few weeks ago. You know, you're petting the dog thinking, oh, this dog is my best friend, and the dog is thinking, this person is the source of my food. They're not thinking, you know, and if there's no food to eat, the person is my food. You know, if the person stops feeding me, well, then I can eat them. So the thoughts in the mind of the animal and the person are very different. But that's often true between humans as well. You know, I'm thinking, oh, this person really loves me and really cares about me, and the other person's thinking, what can I get from her? Isn't it? Or sometimes it goes the other way. Someone's thinking, oh, Ormila really likes me, and I'm thinking, I actually can't stand you. But for this and that purposes, I'm pretending to like you. Yes? And nowadays with electronics, it's really bad. You can think you're having a conversation with them, and they're doing something totally different on their computer. Isn't that a fact? Right? And you're going, yeah, that's really interesting, and you're doing something totally different. We find this with teaching classes on Zoom, right? I was teaching some classes last semester and to the kids, and you know, I'm noticing that one of the students had their headphones in and they're going, and I'm thinking, they're not doing that to my teaching. They're obviously just sitting on the computer listening to something else. So there's often this disconnect, and when the other party doesn't reciprocate the way we like, we become very upset. This is one of the clues as to whether or not we have what Krishna and the gopis talk about in chapter 32 of the 10th canto, a merchant relationship. When the other person doesn't satisfy me the way I want, I cooked a dinner for you, I worked for 8 hours, and you didn't even like my dessert, and we become angry. You know, or you didn't do anything for me in exchange, whenever the other person disappoints us. So those are the material rasas. So this is the... But there is an origin, like Krishna talks about in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that this world is like a what? What does he say, beginning of 15th chapter, the world's like a what?
Banyan
tree. Banyan tree, but not a real banyan tree, a?
Inverted,
reflected. When I was growing up, we had an oil painting in our house, huge painting of trees reflected in the water. So this banyan tree, and a banyan tree, if you haven't seen one, is very complex. And it's upside down, reflected in the water, and the water is shimmering. So the upside down reflection is indicative that there's a real tree somewhere. Janmayasayataha. Everything comes from Krishna. So we may be frustrated, we will be frustrated, we are frustrated in our material so-called rasas, but the fact that we want these, that we want loving exchanges, we want loving exchanges. Animals want loving exchanges. I haven't seen it, but I was reading a news article about some movie of this man who made friends with an octopus, a documentary of a man who for 1 year was diving and watching this octopus, and the octopus gradually came to trust him. And she would curl up in his hand and hug him with her tentacles. And the review was saying, you know, it was a total tearjerker, and it was really, you know, emotionally evocative, this love between the man and the octopus. So the octopi? The octopi, they're looking for loving relationships. You know, everyone. Prabhupada talked about how Dr. Bose, he detected that there were feelings in the trees, that the trees could tell, is this person a friend or an enemy? We're looking for love because there is such a thing. It's not that we become disappointed in our material relationships and then we all become impersonalists. And we say, you know, everybody in this world is a cheater, not realizing that that includes me too. And therefore, you know, I'm just going to give up on all my relationships. No, we look for those relationships with Krishna. And what descriptions of the relationships that Krishna has with the devotees. Here is described, he sees all his devotees like family. In all the different rasas, he sees everyone like family. And he's tasting the simple food, which he's enjoying, as much or more than that cooked by the goddesses of fortune, Lakshmi, Sahasra, Satyasam, Brahmasevimanam. He's served by all these goddesses of fortune, who definitely are expert cooks. They don't even need your cookbook, Apoorva. And they're still expert cooks. Apoorva never has to go in the kitchen of Lakshmi Devi and say, ahem, you put in too much turmeric. You didn't salt it enough. They're all wonderfully expert cooks. And sometimes it says Srimati Radharani never even cooks exactly the same thing twice for all of eternity. So he's got all these expert cooks, goddesses of fortune, who can serve him on gold plates, diamond plates. And he's eating out on the forest. What kind of plates is he eating off of? Stone. Shila, the word here is Shila. Yeah? Oh, we went back to the verse, thank you. Shilayam. He's eating off of Shilas. What Shilas does he often eat off of, by the way? Govardhan Shilas. It's one of the services that Govardhan provides. In the Gopal Champu, Jiva Goswami describes, I was tempted to bring that slideshow, but Jiva Goswami often has a section where he describes how Govardhan is offering everything to Krishna, just like we offer in our deity worship, right? There are five items that that's the minimum. You have to offer those five items every day to the Lord, as explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. But then generally it's 16 items that's offered, and then there's 64 items that's offered. I think Jiva Goswami lists about 25 that Govardhan is offering to Krishna. You know, water for washing the feet, water for washing the hands, water for rinsing the mouth, offers fans and so many things. That's a wonderful, wonderful meditation. And one of the things that Govardhan offers is stones for sitting and stones for eating off. Of course, Govardhan is Krishna, but as Haridasya Varya, as the best servant of Krishna, Krishna often likes to be a servant. So Krishna is also serving his devotees. So they're eating on the stones. Krishna's God, and he's eating in the forest on the stones. He's not eating on a table with plates. He's eating on the stones with his friends. And whatever they bring from home, yogurt mixed with rice. In South India, you basically don't have a meal without what they call curd rice. And curd rice, it's interesting. They don't serve sweets for dessert. They serve curd rice for dessert. And the reason they say is that the enzymes in the yogurt, by curd they mean yogurt, the enzymes in the yogurt clean your mouth and clean your teeth and prevent cavities. And whenever I go to South India, I struggle with a lot of the prasadam because it's very spicy. But I always like the curd rice. I know that if I eat the curd rice, I'll be happy. So, you know, and of course, dozens and dozens of varieties of curd rice. So Krishna's eating this curd rice. It's a very simple preparation. It's not some, you know, like Yamuna in her cookbook has all these fancy preparations for rice. I mean, there's one of them, I've cooked it in big quantities, you know, like 25, 30 cups of rice. And it takes hours, it takes like 4 hours to make this one prep. You've got to roast these spices, and then after roasting them, then you have to let them cool, then you grind them, and then you have eggplant that you're soaking in turmeric and salt and water, and then you're combining, and then you have the saffron, and you have the pistachios, and you have all these different parts of the prep, and then you put them together. By the way, it's a knock your socks off rice. But it takes hours and hours and hours to make this very complex prep. And I tried adjusting her recipe to make it a little faster, but not quite as good as the original recipe. But here Krishna's just eating curd rice. He's not eating a fancy, you know, toast your coriander seeds and grind them up kind of rice and soak your eggplant in turmeric. Just curd rice. And he's just eating with his friends who consider him as an equal. Right, and we were saying the other day how sometimes when the friends share food, they're a little devious. They say, "Oh, look, there's a monkey over there." And then when Krishna looks at the monkey that's not there, they take his samosa, take out the vegetables and put jasmine flowers in it and put it back on his plate. And Krishna's enjoying that more than he's enjoying all the fancy preparations in Vaikuntha. Because he's having fun. You know, God is a child. I was walking out with Abhimanyu the other day, right after rain, there was a big mud puddle. And of course, what does a child do when they see a mud puddle? There's no stopping it, right? And I had just put those pants on him, you know. I came back and said, "Well, those pants lasted a long time." That's what children do. They just play to play. We don't usually do that as adults. Everything has to be very serious. You know? You can't just play. What's the purpose in what you're doing, Prabhu? But when you're a child, you just have fun to have fun. It's interesting that the highest level of meaning in existence is just to play to play. The most meaningful activity possible is just to play with God for no purpose other than to have fun with God. You don't have to accomplish anything. As Prabhupada says, Krishna's not hungry. You know, I have to eat to accomplish something. If I don't eat, my body won't work. And if I'm fasting for a while, you know, at first when I'm fasting, my brain is super sharp because no blood is going to the stomach. But after a while, the brain starts to get duller and duller and duller without any glucose, you know. And after you're fasting for long enough, you're kind of like, what? Right? And then you can't do any serious work on fast. Now you can't do any serious physical. So I have a purpose in eating. And then I have a purpose of enjoying the taste on my tongue, and I have a purpose of enjoying that feeling of fullness in my... Krishna doesn't have a purpose like that. He doesn't need glucose for a brain. He doesn't need energy to, you know, clean his house or cut wood. He doesn't have a purpose. And he doesn't need to enjoy some sense gratificatory procedure of taste on his taste buds. He doesn't have anything to fulfill. It's just a loving exchange. And it's a loving exchange with the boys. It's a loving exchange with his brother, who's himself. It's a loving exchange with the stones. It's a loving exchange with the stones, which are maybe Govardhan stones, which may be a form of himself, or maybe a devotee taking the form of a stone in Shantaras, mixed with some dasya bhava. And Krishna's having this stone is so happy. Imagine. So Krishna's sitting on you. Imagine your stone. Krishna's sitting on you. And he puts his curd rice on you, but it's a little liquidy. And so, you know, you've just been bathed by all the autumnal rains, the monsoon rains, and you're nice and clean. And then Krishna puts this curd rice on you, and there's this kind of yogurt dripping on you, and then Krishna's touching you with his petal-like fingers and lifting the curd rice off of you to eat it and giving it to his friends. I mean, how wonderful would that be? And Krishna's having a relationship with the water. You know, he makes sure he eats near water. And the water, if he's by the Yamuna, which is not stated here, but the Yamuna is a person. Actually, the Yamuna is a form of Vishaka Gopi. And her form is Kalindi. She marries Krishna in Dwarka. And Krishna's drinking that water. I mean, sometimes we say this in affection, right? Like when I'm hanging out with the great-grandkids and we're kissing them, you know, we're kissing their arms and we're blowing bubbles in their belly and we're going, "Oh, I could just eat you up." Oh, you're a delicious baby, right? We talked that way with babies. Of course, if we actually ate the babies, that would be pretty horrendous. But Krishna's actually drinking the water. That's his devotee. And they're eating the food. They're not, but it's not a machine that's digesting food. It's simply a loving exchange. And the Lord is serving the devotees. The cowherd boys are serving Krishna, and Krishna's serving them. It's not a one-way street. It's a real reciprocal relationship. You know, the families are cooking at home, and they're in the village meditating how Krishna's eating in the forest. Oh, right now it's lunchtime. Krishna's eating. Like if we have friends or relatives in other parts of the world and we're thinking, what time zone are they in? What are they doing right now? And so the people in the village who cooked and they've sent the food and they're thinking, oh, it must be lunchtime. They must be eating. And the boys are remembering the family at home who cooked for them. So what's wonderful about bhakti yoga is we don't have to wait until we die and go to the spiritual world to eat with Krishna. We don't have this view that life is supposed to be a bunch of, you know, horrendous austerity. I think Maharaj was talking about this the other day, people flagellating, the monks flagellating themselves. Were you talking about that? It's not like that. It's the Krishna consciousness. We talk about doing austerity, but, you know, our austerity is not eating meat, fish, and eggs. That's our austerity. Not taking intoxicants, not doing terrible things. So it's not that we have to, you know, beat ourselves up mentally or physically and just go through some hellish life with the hope that after death we'll... We're doing it right now. We're cooking for Krishna right now. And we're serving him food. And you know what? He serves us food too. Isn't it? We cook for Krishna and then we also eat the prasada. It could be, we could put the plate on the altar and Krishna could just eat all of it and say, none for you, slaves. But whatever he eats, he gives us. We eat the best food on the planet, everybody knows that. Even people who don't like us know that, isn't it? Everybody knows the Hare Krishnas have the best food on the planet. Who was it, Steve Jobs? He was making a speech in front of millions of people. And he was talking about how the way he survived as a poor student was by walking across town to get that great food from the Hare Krishnas. And nobody can imitate our food. Why? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was given some prasadam, he said, everybody knows what the ingredients are. But what is this taste that's not just the ingredients? I had this experience in Puerto Rico. We were serving out cookies at a university program. And I knew it was in the cookies. I was there in the kitchen when Kamagiri made them. It was as simple as you can possibly get. Butter, sugar, flour, and, you know, baking powder. Maybe there was some vanilla. I mean, it was, you just can't make a simpler cookie. And the people at this university program were all coming up to me. I was the speaker there. What's the recipe? Because what did Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu say? What are we getting in the prasadam?
Saliva.
The saliva of the Lord. What God tastes like. What does God taste like? So this is a great loving exchange. We're offering Krishna food with devotion. What can we offer him? What can we grow on this planet in Kali Yuga? You know, even if we have our own local organic garden, I mean, it's nothing like what he can get from Indra or from Bhrigu Muni, or what to speak of Lakshmi Devi and Vaikuntha. What are we offering him? But with love. You know, we don't have solid gold plates and diamond cups, but there's love. And Krishna also loves us. And he says, yes, you can also eat. We give him, he gives us. So this loving exchanges between the devotees and the Lord, the devotees and each other, the Lord and the devotees, is what nourishes our Krishna-conscious society. And I'll end with this little story. story. So a Tamil president in one temple in Europe, I will not say who or where, but they have a restaurant in the front entrance of the temple, and there's a painting in the entrance of Krishna eating with the cowherd boys, like this description. So two guests came, it's a restaurant, so the public is coming, so these two guests came, never been to the temple before, and they're sitting talking to the temple president. And he's talking with them about how Krishna eats with his friends and how we offer food to Krishna. And as he's speaking, he said, all of a sudden, the painting was real. And there was Krishna and Balaram and all the cowherd boys with them in the room eating prasadam. And he said it was like a momentary thing. And then these two guests who've never been in a temple before looked at him and said, what just happened? Who is that? What happened in the room? What do I have to do to join your movement? So please don't think that the deities are made of stone or that the prasadam is ordinary prasadam. It's ordinary food, that it's just ordinary ingredients. We're actually having a loving exchange with God. So questions, comments? Maharaj, yes?
It's not a challenge, don't worry.
Even if it is, I'm not worried.
There's a place you could go in Braj where it has the original stone that Krishna and Balaram came from.
Oh.
And it's indented. And you can actually see it. I think anybody else seen that stone?
The stone where Krishna and Balaram were eating?
It's actually indented. Actually, there's Balaram's...
Maharaj is saying that there's an actual stone in Vrindavan you can see that's indented, and you can see the stone where Krishna and Balaram were eating.
It's in Braj, Western Braj.
Western Braj.
Yes, part of the Braj Mandala Prakram.
Part of the Braj Mandala Prakram. Thank you. Yes, Krista Prabhu.
We know that the relationships in the material world are fraught with great difficulty, but we do see people, like, you know, couple married 70 years and they die 3 minutes from each other or die holding hands. So, you know, what about things like that?
Okay, so just if we were saying that even though there's difficulty in material relationships, we see couples married for 70 years that die holding hands. There's something. There's a drop of water in this desert. It's not that there's nothing. There's something. There's something here. But it's not enough to satisfy us. It's not enough to satisfy us. Unless we have Krishna at the center, whatever little drops we get separate from Krishna, we're not going to be happy. When we have Krishna in the center, then we can have genuine relationships between jivas also. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.